This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Let's go into this one. This is very interesting, actually, because we're about to simmer down. You know, some people, I think maybe from the 16th of December, some 23rd of December, some are working throughout this course of the December period. But in our working environment, in our working life, where we spend between 8 to 12 hours a day, we meet up with different personalities, right? We've got different people that at work. They come from different historical backgrounds. They come from different family dynamics. They have got different emotions when they come into the workplace. So how equipped, how mature are we to deal with the dynamic environment that work provides itself with? More than anything else, what if the work environment is antagonizing? Well, it's challenging to deal with because of microaggressions. How do you handle people that are, let's say, passive aggressive? How do you handle people that are not nice? And I often use this word. I know it sounds so just simple, but I really do. I say it's not nice. You know, how do you deal with people that are just not nice? And what if the people that are not nice are actually your bosses? How do you deal with the boss who is aggressive or passive aggressive towards you? And do you have to spend at least 12 hours sometimes of your day in that space? And it's difficult to be in that kind of a work environment. Now, I will share a story and then we're going to take a break and then I'll come back and introduce my guest. But I will share a story because I've never, ever done this before. And it was the first time in 2019 early that I've ever done. I'll never mention the name, but I've ever done this before. Now, I come from a background where I believe you don't jump unless you've got a landing space, right? So you don't resign or you don't decide to leave unless you know where you're going to, because I like backup. I'm a control person, so I like knowing that there's a backup plan, right? I don't just leave it to the universe. I want to know that I'm helping the universe along the way, right? So when it comes to work and work opportunities and the like, I'm the same. So I don't leave unless there's a place to go or I'm progressing. So I believe in accelerant progression. So it came a point in my life because of an environment, a work environment that I was involved in about a couple of years ago, where the space, and I don't know if anybody has ever felt this before, but if you have, I would love for you to share with us on 0861987000. And I've never, ever, 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 ever in my entire working career, and I've been working since I was 16, but I've never in my entire work career come across a time where when I have to go to work, my body would physically ache. Like I would feel as though there are bricks on my shoulders. My stomach would be in knots all the time. Like I would be nervous and then I'd be uncertain and I would be unhappy. Like my tummy was in knots. My shoulders were heavy, right? It almost felt as though there were always people wanting me to fail. And then when you get to the work environment, there were microaggressions. So you have to deal with attitude and you have to deal with aggression and. To a point where I said, and I've never made a decision like this in my entire working career, and except that one time where I said, I remember making a phone call to my mother, and my mom knows me very well. And I said, Mama, you know, I don't believe in quitting. I don't know how to quit, in fact, anything in life, but I cannot go to work any longer. And my mother looked at me and she said to me, Nomzam, I would rather have a daughter who does not have a work plan than have a daughter who's dead because of her heart. And that was the first time and the last time in my entire work career that I decided to resign with immediate effect. And it takes somebody a long time before they get to the place of resignation. I can imagine how difficult it is to resign. But because of the work environment that I was in, I just felt like I couldn't bring my absolute best, because my absolute best was met with aggression on all spaces, on all spheres. Now, I'm just sharing my story of what I went through. And I wonder if many of you are even in that similar situation at work where you get up in the morning and your shoulders are heavy and your stomach is in knots and you're overthinking about the type of people that you're going to meet in the workplace. That's the conversation that we're having today. Where are you with locating yourself within that toxicity? And how do you know it's time to leave? And how do you know how to deal with it and set up boundaries that are effective? Let's talk. It's 1313.
Urgent, topical, timely. Power 98.7. Getting you talking about what matters.
Indeed. Let's talk about your workplace today. Recognizing and responding to microaggressions in the workplace. And I've given you a little bit of a snippet of my life. The only time in my entire career where I had to make a decision and say I resign with immediate effect, pushed really to that point. And I tell you one thing, it's not a nice place to be in. But the environment, the work environment, it's become so pertinent to your progress as well as your mental health. Let's welcome our guest this afternoon. Manuka Mathe, who joins us now, is a business and career coach and chartered accountant. Manuka, thank you so much for your time this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you so much, Faith, and good afternoon to your listeners.
We've also got Ayanda Zaita, who's a diversity, equity, and inclusion practitioner and a director at Vitova and an associate at Mandate Molefe. Thank you so much for your time this afternoon, Ayanda. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Such a pleasure, Faith. Thank you for having me, and good afternoon to the listeners.
We've also got Dr. Andrew Johnson joining us, a critical social scientist and the founder of the Institute of Leadership Action and co-founder of the Black Industrial and Organizational Psychologists Caucus. Dr. Andrew, thank you so much. It's a mouthful, but thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. Welcome to Power Lunch.
Thank you very much, Faith, and good afternoon to you and your listeners. Great to be here.
Let's start off with you, in fact, Dr. Andrew. You know, I was just mentioning a typical example that I faced, and the only time I've ever faced something like this, where I had to make a difficult decision of leaving a place because the environment was just completely unfathomable in my opinion. But a lot of people are facing this every single day. A lot of people go to work and go to an antagonizing or an environment that is not conducive to their space of growth and even to the level of mental health. What causes these environments? You know, like I struggle to see what could consciously cause an environment which becomes toxic.
I think, you know, if one were to talk, for example, what black people experience within the workplace, it has to do with the fact that, you know, there are no longer any institutional things that says, you know, you need to treat this person different on the basis of his color or whatever. But the problem is that the problem resides within what I would call not looking at what is the elephant in the room, but what is actually the room. If I were to paraphrase Nelva Marquez Green. And what she is talking about is that some of these things become so systemic in how they operate in the environment that sometimes, and you have given some examples of it, some of these things are so, have become so part of how the system operates that you can't specifically pinpoint it. You can't say, for example, directly or consciously that this person is discriminating against me, because it's no longer about that. And in fact, if a person were to do that, there would be serious consequences for a person. So what happens is that a lot of these things are sitting inside the system, and therefore it is the room, and we cannot see it so visibly any longer. Toxicity operates on exactly the same basis because, you know, it is the way that managers create environments. And if you were to think about culture, for example, culture, simple definition of it is the way we do things around here. Now, the question would be, who are the people who fundamentally sets the tone for the way we do things around here? It's your leadership within the organization and specifically your senior leadership. Now, if these people are promoting certain, you know, ways and practices within the organization that ensures that people are not fairly, for example, managed in terms of their performance and evaluated on that, or you have these clique groups of the in-group within the organization who sits around the boss, do what the boss requires, and everybody can see some of it. You know, some of it is visible, others are not so visible. You see this kind of thing. It's clear that it is going to create an environment where a person who considers himself to be a professional, you know, wants to make a significant contribution to the organization, is going to feel this is not a fair place. Sure. And I think it has to do a lot with the leadership that you find in organization, allowing that. It's not to say that people can't contribute, employers, general employees, but if leaders allow such a situation to evolve, then it is also incumbent on them to change it. Nobody else can actually make that happen because the power lies with them. And in fact, the organization authorized them to either create a space of significant growth for an organization or one that is highly toxic.
You know, I want to build from what Dr. Andrew was saying, Manoka, speaking about, and different pinpoints were mentioned here. But sometimes you can't, it's not on paper. So the aggression, the passive aggression, it's not written. It's not something where I called Manoka, you know, the K word. Because that is documented. It doesn't have that. You can feel it. You can't touch it because it doesn't exist. And yet people go to work every single day almost with a gaslit kind of mindset because you can't feel this thing. So what do you do when you can't even put a word or even attribute a certain phrase to it? Because they didn't call you names. They didn't say you are useless. But it's the way that they speak to you and you can't put a word on it. How do you even deal with that?
So I think one of the biggest contributors is the fact that there is no awareness or there isn't sufficient awareness about microaggressions. Mm. It is extremely subtle. Someone is not going to call you a particular word, but in the phrases that they say, there are things that make you feel somewhat uncomfortable. Mm. And I've got a few examples. So someone saying to you that they do not see color. Someone saying, I remember a former colleague saying, so this gentleman was gay and he said that he felt so uncomfortable when colleagues kept asking, do you have a girlfriend? Because that made him feel that he should have a girlfriend or it's uncomfortable for others to perceive that he might not be a certain orientation. So those things are very subtle. So I think the first step is the more we're having these types of conversations where people are actually aware that anyone can actually say something that is a microaggression towards the next person, whether it's based on gender, race, sexuality, a person's mental health, someone being a parent or not being a parent. So I think the more conversations that we're having and raising awareness about this is when we all realize that we may at one point or another have all said something that is somewhat insensitive to the next party.
You know, Ayanda, as Manuka's mentioning that, because you can't see it and because you can't touch it, it's difficult to recognize. And I can imagine those that have been in an organization may have had to even assimilate, right? So they've just decided to be part of the whole package. And then you come in from the outside and you look at this and you go, my gosh. But then people can look at you and say, but loya tefalo. You know, because there's a difference between, you know, wanting an environment that is conducive, that's cohesive, and that is fruitful, versus umuntu just wanted to be treated with kid gloves and pampered all the way.
So I think, Faith, there's a couple of things. I mean, the fact that you can't see it is precisely one of the difficulties in identifying these issues and to pointing them out. Because I imagine in your case, and I've had similar experiences in my other workplaces, where, you know, so that feeling of being sick to the stomach.
The shoulders are heavy.
It's a pain to get out of bed. Yeah. The thought of Sunday afternoon comes or evening comes and already your mood is going down because you are thinking about that. But really, because it's so difficult to identify, it's also not a singular thing. It's not like when somebody comes and says X to you, therefore you've got a solid thing to go based on and saying, because so-and-so was racist to me or whatever the case is, therefore I'm leaving or there's a case to be made legally or otherwise. Mm. It's a combination of these small things that happen through a period that gets you to that place of sickness and feeling. And the fact that you feel disempowered in many cases or don't have the right language to describe what it is that you're feeling, especially when someone asks you what is the problem, it's often difficult to put words to it because it's not just one problem. It's a combination of things. It's, as a doctor said, it's the room. It's, we're not looking at the elephant. The elephant, yes, exists, but the room itself is the problem. It's the decor. It's the lights. It's a combination of things.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Andrew, I've witnessed a lot of work environments, and whether this is legal or not, because we'll talk about that the other day, but I've witnessed work environments where the boss will message somebody at, let's say, 1 o'clock in the morning, or an email will come in at 1 o'clock in the morning. And there's almost an expectation that has not been spoken of, why haven't you responded to my email, when a person is, and I know many, some of them, you know, the people that I deem to be my partners, business partners and the like, where emails are sent at 1 o'clock in the morning to staff. And then you wonder, what time is the staff member going to answer an email at 1 o'clock in the morning? But there's this, and then it becomes this unheard of competition of if the person can wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning or 1:30 and answer the email of the boss, then they automatically become the flavor of the week. Right. But what kind of work environments are we formulating? And maybe it's even us, where an email gets sent at 1 o'clock in the morning and we have got the secret anticipation that people will actually respond to me at that time.
Exactly. And I think this is precisely the kind of thing we're talking about, microaggression. I think what Manoka says is absolutely true. The more we talk about it, the better. Because one of the things we do in talking about it is that what used to be unconscious now become conscious, because you can only deal with the issue when you can actually give a label to it. And I think it's quite interesting, Faith, that the concept microaggression, you would be surprised to know, it's something that was coined already in 1969. Mm-hmm. That's how far back it goes. And yet, the only time that it really began to take on, you know, significant space in our conversation was now in recent times, you know. So we're beginning to name it and say that thing of a boss putting pressure on a person, calling you in your free time, you know, over weekends, and that kind of thing is very much an aggression towards the person, because it puts, what is the effect of it? It puts incredible stress on the other person, because you have to now make choices. Are you going to answer or you're not going to answer? And what are the consequences of not doing or doing, whatever the case may be? And I think that is why these kind of things, and as Manoka says, it's precisely because we can't, and I think you also spoke to it, we can't put our finger on it. That's why it's necessary for us to label it. It's now we know it is microaggression against marginalized groups, whether it be blacks or women or people of particular sexual orientation or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. Because it's intended to put the person into his place or her place. That's what a microaggression is, that you must be grateful that we have allowed you into our very grand space, but you must show some gratitude for that, because remember, it's not your place. We have kind of invited you in here, so behave. Don't.
So we're doing you a favor, even though you're doing the work exactly. And you're getting paid. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, because we are doing you a favor. So sure. Don't come and disturb the peace here now. And when people point it out, as often would happen, the person might respond, which it is in itself is a microaggression. The person might say, don't be so sensitive about this particular issue. Because... you know, I was just making a joke, you know, but the joke at the racial slant, for example, to it, now you're pointing out, no, that's inappropriate. But no, you're too sensitive about this issue. Of course, we have to be sensitive. It's our lived experience daily. So it's in that sense that, you know, it's important that we label it and bring it into our conscious attention. And that, as Madoka says, we can do and continue to do. I do a lot of work of it now, of getting people to have conversation about it, because we need to be able to talk about it for it to continue to stay in our conscious mind.
We're going to continue after the news. And if you've ever been a victim of microaggression, hey, and if you would be brave enough, maybe you are the employer and you are the other side. And you recognize through this conversation that maybe you have been microaggressive and you want to remain anonymous. Please take this as an open space where we just get to share. And we'll share some more. It's right now, the top best one. Let's get your latest Empower news.
Call Faith on 0861-987-000.
All right, it's 23 minutes to go before the top of the hour. We're talking here about recognizing and responding to microaggressions in the workplace, right? So how do you deal with aggressions where race and ethnicity is concerned? Your class, mental health, your gender, sexuality, your parental status, and how do you formulate those boundaries? Maybe you are going through this right now where you feel as though the environment that you're in right now is toxic. Toxic, 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 but you don't know how to respond to it. The budget does not allow you to respond to it. And you don't know if you resign, where you're going to go. And if you have been a victim of microaggression, or you have been on the other side where you have been microaggressive towards people, whether it's colleagues, whether it's even to your staff members, and you just want to take a moment from your insights or even remain anonymous, you can do so on 0861-987-000. As we continue with our guests this afternoon, we've got Dr. Andrew Johnson joining us. We've also got Manoka Matia as well as Ayanda Zaka there with us in the studio. And you make the conversation. So 0861-987-000. Let me start off on the phone lines before I go back to my guests. Let me start off with Anonymous and Soshanguve. Hi, Anonymous. You're saying that your girlfriend is a victim of microaggression. Hi. What's going on?
I'm good. That thing is very painful, believe me.
Mm.
Yeah, my partner is working in the banking sector.
Mm-hmm.
She's just recently being hired. Now she's doing a year. Jesus Christ, the stories will come home and tell you they are very painful.
Mm.
That's ops manager who doesn't like her. Like we had Baba Tumunda Tandi. Aram Tandi and Aram Food. You know, it came to a point where I started advising her, why don't we just go to Home Affairs, sign the marriage certificate, then start the process of Ufuna Elon e transfer? Because I wouldn't let her from, she was thinking, let me just leave the workplace because it's very toxic. Then, because we need the funds, I was like, no, let's not do that. Why can't we just go and sign the process of Afuna Elon e transfer?
Sure. So it's like at that level.
Yes, it was at that level, and I was like, we are Christians. Then you start thinking issues like Muti, why can't you just consult, you know, stuff like that, so that we can just get it off our shoulders. It's very painful, but nowadays it's much better, but it's painful, believe me.
I can imagine, Anonymous, and I think, again, because you can't put a finger to it, you don't even know, Guti, you are overreacting. Because then there'll be that excuse that you're overreacting or that you are imagining things, right? Or you're too sensitive. And I've seen this. I want us to talk about different components and really go deeper within this. Race, for example, right? And what role does race play? Because now in the workplace, they can no longer call you names. You know, Anonymous was making sure, was talking about toxicity, and we're going to get into how do we solve for toxicity. But they don't longer can call you names, or at least they shouldn't. But they can use different ways to show you don't belong. I will be upfront and personal and say to this, I've never understood a work environment where you had, let's say, a white supervisor and black staff, and then the white supervisor started saying things like, hey, when a sipo come along, and then they use like funny galore kind of talk. I don't know how many people have seen that, but you use like a, you know, funny galore kind of talk to speak to people. Mm-hmm. I never understood that.
It almost feels, I think, very degrading.
Very degrading. Why are you speaking in funny? Why don't you just speak English
or learn the language?
Or learn the language if you can't speak it.
Yeah.
So how do we navigate race? Because race becomes a very pertinent thing. Once you accuse somebody of being racism, there's no going back from there.
Mm.
How do you manage microaggression where race is concerned?
Yeah. I think for me, if I can maybe just go back to Anonymous quickly, I'll come back to your point. I just want to acknowledge the pain that you hear in his voice. It's not even his own experience. It's experience of his partner, but you can almost hear the emotion in his voice. of how deeply he's affected through this experience of his partner. So also for, I think, critically, and why these conversations need to happen, as Manuka said, is because we need to be able to helping people. This affects people materially, psychologically, physically, and otherwise, financially even. And so this is why I think it's such a critical conversation to be having. But I think when where race comes in, for me, is if you look at the structure still of who is in leadership, generally speaking, in corporates out there, even today, maybe even that financial institution that Anonymous mentioned, it is still a very much white-led, male-led. And so that culture, that way of speaking, the way that we do things around here, you're talking about going to the cigar lounge and this almost systematic or sometimes unconscious and maybe even conscious exclusion or diminishing of other people and their importance and priority and their interests is part of what I think is the things that we are still working out in our society. We've swept many things under the rug over the years, and we've learned the right language and the things to say and not to say and to sound nice, but actually at a heart and a mental and a belief level, we remain unchanged for the large part. And so that, I think, is what comes out in these expressions of microaggressions, especially towards race and gender, sexuality, etc.
But how do you deal with it practically, Manga? Like, how do you deal with, because you don't want to go into the place where you go, you're being racist, right? But you also want to say, don't step on me. This is not, you know, don't touch that. How do you deal with it practically?
All right. So from a practical perspective, if someone has said something to you that felt uncomfortable or felt charged in a certain way, you then need to make the decision, am I going to address this with the individual right now in the moment, or do I want to address this at a different point in time? And I think based on your personality and style, some people may want to do it in the moment. So I'm a very off the cuff person, so I feel comfortable. When I'm uncomfortable, I would like to tell you right now. But for the next person who doesn't feel as comfortable, plan that conversation to say, I need to sit down with the person who said this point, right? So give yourself time. Don't do it today. So if it happens today, give yourself a couple of days. So say, I'm going to address this with the individual on Monday. So you plan and prepare for the conversation. When you're having the conversation, you want to use wording that is neutral. As you said, Faith, if you say to someone you're a racist,
You've already started something now. Yeah.
That is inflammatory language. So you want to say, when you said you do not see color, this is how I interpreted it or how I felt. So you are then sharing your experience and you are allowing the individual the opportunity to understand why you were impacted. And very important for anyone who's ever going to be in any discussion, whether difficult or not, is the intention or the reason why you said that statement doesn't affect how the person perceives it or the impact on the next person. So if you say you don't see color and you know you think that's a perfect statement, but I, as a black person, I see color. We're all different colors. We're all different shades. So understand that your intention, whether you were joking, whether this was lighthearted, doesn't mean the person needs to receive it in that manner. So practically, that's how I would say our listeners should approach this. Plan and prepare. What are you going to say? What words can you use? And as I said, no inflammatory language. So do not make an assumption or the person is charged, they are racist. No, they made a racially charged comment.
You've made a racially charged comment. This made me feel.
Yes.
That, you know, it made me feel uncomfortable. It made me feel degraded. And I would appreciate it if you did not do it.
Yes.
Like that.
Spot on.
We are learning every single day. Let me go to Makosonke Jablani. Hi, Makosonke.
Yes, Faith, and your guest.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yes. I believe that microaggression, and maybe your guest then would have a different opinion, but I believe that it comes from a point where as a leader, you were not empowered to deal with your emotions. You know, you're not in control of your emotions. Mm-hmm. And now you're dealing with different people who's come with different challenges from. And as you know, that people have different challenges at home. And secondly, also, I believe that not enough is done in terms of empowering whoever is leading to to inspire those that they report, those that he is leading, to be able to, you know, when you inspire people, then you create an environment that is conducive that you're talking about. Do you understand? So I was in the corporate sector, and I felt that if that was in place, because I had to do it myself, and I had to do a research, but even when they advertise a post, they will tell you you need to be able to motivate people. But how? How do I motivate people?
If I've never learned how to motivate people in the first place.
If I've never learned to motivate people, thank you. Okay.
That is a very interesting point that you're making there. Dr. Andrew, I want to build from what Makosonke is saying. People know how to be entrepreneurial. People know how to hustle, make something out of nothing, be in business management. And sometimes we interpret people knowing how to be entrepreneurs for people knowing how to lead. And I think there are two different things here between leadership and knowing how to be a great entrepreneur or a great business person.
Absolutely. I would agree with that. And I think that's why the whole idea about leadership development, effective leadership development, is so critical in organizations. And especially of the kind that is going to help challenge the mindsets of leaders. So, for example, if one were to talk about microaggression, for example, we're talking about how do we educate ourselves, and therefore you can recognize it in the workplace. It is useful to use maybe a typology of the type of microaggressions we have. So, for example, a leader need to know that, and people generally speaking, so that you can respond to it. And maybe before I launch into that, I just wanted to respond to something Manoko said. I think it is difficult often for people. We are fearful, generally speaking, and it's important that we recognize our fear, not wanting to speak up in a particular moment. My own sense would be it is better to try and speak up there, recognize your fear, but as somebody has said, often something attributed to Madiba, we act in spite of our fear. So even if your voice shake, say what you need to say in the moment, because that person can argue later on that, you know, no, I've got total amnesia about what you're saying, or now twist what actually happened in the moment. Whereas here, you see it happen and you're responding to it to say that's inappropriate. So for example, when and Manoko spoke about that idea of people say, no, I don't see color in this thing, you know, but color is all around you. And I feel that you have just treated me like that. So that's what we would call a micro invalidation. Or a person says to you, don't make everything about race. Racism doesn't exist today.
Yes, everything about race thing is heard time and time again.
It's totally invalidating your lived experience of racism daily. I mean, that is a microaggression, a micro-invalidation, or a micro-insult where you make a subtle put-down of a person. Like, for example, I don't know if you've heard this one, you're not like the rest of them, you're different. a micro assault might be, and you actually speak very good English, Faith, you know.
Dr. Andrew, you're triggering me. Don't even start that one, because if I had a dollar and a dime for every time somebody said I sound good, God, I'd be a multimillionaire.
In fact, if I just listened to you now on the radio and didn't know who Faith was, I probably would have said, no, Faith probably sound white, because we ourselves are so deeply conditioned with our own internalized oppression that we cannot see any longer that there is a problem about what is going on. So I think one of the things is managers and people need to educate what would be microaggressions in the workplace, because these things about, it could be a very innocuous statement to say to you, Faith, that you actually speak very good English, because maybe you do speak very good English. Now, in a general sense, there is nothing wrong with the statement, but the statement becomes problematic, the context in which it is made, because the person would not make such a statement to a white person to say, you speak very good English. That's where the rub lies, because it is speaking to a particular person in regard to, or even a microaggression from a micro assault point of view, could also be, I don't bother to actually try and pronounce your name correctly. Yes. I mean, if I keep on saying to you, Chepo, instead of trying to learn how to say Chepo, you know, if you don't do this kind of thing whereby you treat the other person with respect and therefore you try and go out of your way to make sure that, for example, when you pronounce that person's name, you have made an effort to try and pronounce it correctly, because otherwise it's like saying, well, you must just accept whatever I give to you. That is a problem.
I hear you. Let me go back to the phone lines. Thabo in Garankuwa. Hi, Thabo.
Hi, good day, Faith and panel.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. You know, I got a very emotional situation. I was employed in one of the government institutions, and in 2016, I jumped ship because the environment was no longer conducive. And then what actually happened was we as employees had a group grievance which was supposed to be presented like to one of the executives who was the senior to the senior manager who we had a complaint against, Yeah, but you know, they were, I can say, of the same race. Okay. Mm. And then now the executive interpreted that, okay, fine, this bull has got this complaint. And then apparently he didn't expect us to raise some of the issues which we complained about, you know. And then, okay, took him by surprise. And then he was to discuss the matters that we complained about with this senior manager, you know. And sure. Then he went and made an appointment with him. And then after that, he came back to us because it was a number of issues which we tabled to in order to be addressed in a grievance form and what in it through the internal structures of the company.
Yeah.
Then you know, things like we must bring proof to what we allege. Some ladies were having problem that this senior manager is maybe doing some advances to them, and then how do you bring proof for such? And then the other thing is the management style. It was too autocratic, and then he would employ some people that are known to him and his friends and stuff, bring them to our environment. But the fortunate part was some of the duties were too technical to the extent that even if he made favor to them, they would be exposed and then finally resign, you know.
Sure. Yeah. And I believe, Thabo, you actually even left the company. You ended up leaving.
I left the company.
Sure.
But because I was representing that was me who was presenting this group grievance. Now the executive took it that maybe I was the instigator, and then started trying to make the situation untenable, you know.
Oh, I'm sorry that you had to go through that, Thabo. It's hard, and I want to build from what you were saying, where when the inquiry was made, when the investigation, the prove it. So they want an evidence-based investigation, right? And I struggle with the prove it part, because how do you prove that someone was antagonistic, or somebody was aggressive, or somebody was prejudicial, or somebody did say something that was racially charged? The prove it part, even maybe somebody making sexual advances and you rejecting them, and as a result of that, now you're feeling the burn of rejecting somebody. Yeah. How do you prove?
Faith, I don't know, to be honest. unless, as I said earlier, that there's a particular, maybe there's an email or a photo or a recording or something like that, it's almost impossible to do.
Yeah, because it diminishes trust in the workplace in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, that's also consequential, is that relationships get broken down. And so people feel like they would need to walk on eggshells around one another. But to place the burden of proof on the victim already in itself is problematic. To say to somebody, as Thabo said, go and find proof of a sexual advance, I don't know how you manage like that. How do you run an organization with that way of thinking, of treating your staff? And I mean, case in point, Thabo left, so it'll show up in the staff turnover as well from a leadership perspective. So I think if it's any encouragement, the organizations and the leaders who tend to practice these kind of things will pay for it. Although you might not be there to see it, but they'll pay for it financially. They'll pay for it
because they're building a culture, the culture will not advance them.
The culture will not advance them. The organization itself, in time, probably will not exist unless there are radical changes that are made. It's probably small consolation to the victim, of course, but I think, as you also said, you left. I left the organization I was in, and so people will vote with their feet eventually.
Yeah, you know, Mayuka, as you're speaking about the prove it element of it. I want to go to the and I've heard time and time people saying, "I'm being pushed out."
Yes.
I'm being pushed out, and you can't because when you ask a person how are they pushing you out, you know, you don't even know how to respond to "I'm being pushed out," right? Maybe they're allocating responsibility differently. Maybe the way that they isolate you. Maybe during meetings you don't get the cup of coffee when everybody's getting a cup of coffee. But things like that, when you say it out loud, it's like I'm being petty here, right? But there are people in organizations where they are being pushed out. How does a person retaliate in a place where they're being pushed out?
So I think it would be a very lengthy process to try and manage. So in the beginning, if there are, you know, evidence-based things, as you're saying, for example, where you can say this person has said the following things. So things that you can tangibly prove and hopefully discuss with either your line manager or leadership. But in this instance, I would believe if you're at that point where you believe that you're being pushed out, that this is not an effort of one individual. It is a collaborative effort, whether it is your line manager, people higher up, or even your HR team. So I think when you are in that instance, you need to be very intentional about what your plan is. Are you able to fix this environment that you're in? Or do you need to plan a safe exit? And a safe exit is when you know this is how long I can stay. This is what I'm still getting out of the environment. This is where I plan to land. The reality is an environment that has become very tough or difficult. You get to a point where you're not even learning. That's how difficult and tough it is. So tell me, if you're in a job, you're not learning. Sometimes you're even concerned about the earning. So why are you still there? So when you get to a point where you believe that there are these steps that are being taken and it is uncomfortable, start to plan a safe exit.
We're going to get into deep emotions around and we're going to wrap up with our guests after the news.
12 to 3 p.m. Power Lunch with Faith Mangope.
We're going to wrap up with our guests in a moment because we need practical tools to be able to deal with a very sometimes dynamic and oftentimes toxic work environment. And may I just acknowledge first, I see many of you sneaking into my DMs to share your stories because of the sensitivity of it. I just want to acknowledge you and say I really appreciate you and the fact that you trust me with your stories. I've got Brashiba, for example. You did not sneak into my DMs. You were saying that you were working as a petrol attendant somewhere in Menlyn. The working environment got so toxic, the owner called us even with the F word every time she spoke to us. Wandi Lem Jali saying that this is not my experience, but a friend who's been treated or micromanaged like that by their boss. He started doing the same thing to the boss, calls them when they appear away on Teams, working from home, and seems to be working because the boss has backed off. But see, the microaggression, how then do we start treating it practically? We saw with Dr. Johnson, as well as Ayanda Zata and Manuka Matia, and you on 0808-987-000. I want us to start getting practical. Dr. Andrew, let's say you're in the situation right now. You are either being, micromanaged, or somebody's being aggressive because you happen to have a child right? So it's that thing of, you're going off work again to fetch your child, you know, or people wanting you to respond to emails at 3 o'clock in the morning, or people just gender and race coming into it again, and sexism or advances that you can't feel and touch. What can the person do to establish these boundaries of respect from the get-go?
I think maybe, first of all, just in relation to the organization, that burden of proof that often a person who come from such a marginalized group experience could easily be overcome if the organization step up and say, we do recognize that there is racism and sexism in our organization. Because once they make that statement, and in a way that, you know, I mean, it's not standing up, but it's building it into your culture to say, these are real things that we are dealing with. Mm. Therefore, the burden of proof become less for the person who then obviously have to give forward some evidence what has happened with regard to it, because you want to ensure fairness to everybody in this regard. But the burden of proof then gets lifted off the person. I think in terms of tackling it, it is about, for me, I think, education. What is the education about? The education is about understanding that racism operates at a very subtle level, precisely because the institutional is no longer there. So we don't have institutional racism, but it still sits in the system, and people experience this being put down. Why are we talking in our programs about inclusion? Why are we still talking about inclusion if that problem was overcome already previously? But today we're still talking about diversity and inclusion program, which I believe fundamentally, largely, have not actually been successful, my view on it. And it's precisely because we don't tackle where does this thing come from. So it cannot then avoid a conversation around those things that do create marginalization, like, for example, race or gender. Mm-hmm. You have to talk about it and to understand that these things do exist. Secondly, that education is the what of it. People need to be given some examples to say a microaggression means the following. I think throughout the afternoon, as we were talking with you, you and the other guests, also give examples of what does this thing really entail, because one of the ways of lifting something that operates at such an unconscious level within the organization is to label it, as I've said earlier, which means you give it a name. These are the things that we're talking about, and there are various other examples, because as soon as you give one or two examples, people say, oh, I recognize that I've had a similar experience but slightly different. And here's an example of what I had experienced, because now people are educated, and the more educated you are about the thing, the better there's a chance to avoid that kind of thing. As I said to a group of people elsewhere, for example, for a white colleague, it's better than in this particular instance to err on the side of caution, to say, I better be a bit more cautious about these kind of things, because there is potential for it to cause harm.
I hear you, Dr. And I have to pause it there for now. But Manuka, and I loved what you were saying as we close, that microaggression is not just from leader to employees or from employer to employees. Even amongst employees, those can exist.
Absolutely spot on. And I think that's why I was very mindful of giving examples, because as Dr. Andrew is saying, there is a possibility that we are saying all of these things and not realizing. So I found a website that actually gives a lot of examples of microaggressions, okay. And I really love it. So I thought I'd share it with your listeners. It's called themicropedia.org.
Themicropedia.org.
.org.
Lovely.
And they have a lot of examples, also grouped by category. And I really like it because you cannot change something that you do not know. So until someone tells you that a certain phrase makes them uncomfortable, you may say it 100 times and go unnoticed and no one ever says it, but there is a certain feeling about you, or when you walk into a certain room, there is a reaction, but you do not know why. So I just thought I would share that tool, because I think all of us can gain value from seeing that. And then I just want to say something. You were talking about what do leaders do to try and remedy these type of situations. And Dr. Andrew spoke about inclusive work environments. So an inclusive work environment, studies show people are way more productive. I've seen studies that say 60% more productive because they work in an inclusive environment. Turnover is reduced by 50% where the environment is inclusive. So to anyone who leads a team, to anyone who is a leader, thinks of themselves as a leader, it does not make business sense to allow situations like this to foster and to grow. So for your business to be healthy and happy and make sense on the bottom line, you are going to need to encourage an inclusive work environment.
I like it. Micropedia.org. And I love what you said about inclusiveness, because if your staff complement is all black or mostly black, think twice. If your staff complement is mostly white, think twice. Same as Indian, same as colored. The more inclusive and diverse, the more you're able to cope and learn how to deal with a dynamic work environment, because that's what we're living. We're living in a dynamic world anyways. As we close off with you, Ayanda, quick tips for us.
I wrote down 5 things here that I think your listeners there could do to help themselves with this topic. Maybe just to start off on the point that Manuku made, you cannot change something you do not know. Mm-hmm. One of the things that you could possibly have an influence in is the rules, the processes, the policies of the organization. If you do not know those, it's very difficult to speak to them.
Gotcha.
Or to make examples that relate to their violation of those policies, etc. Mm-hmm. Or to make recommendations of where they could be improved. So to Dr. Andrew's point, I see that as educating yourself, knowing the language, having the language to use to describe the emotion that you feel and how to connect those two so that you can put it in a way that is, if I could say in inverted commas, not emotional, so that people hear what you say. You could also speak to people, and I really encourage that, because sometimes what we think is, am I imagining this? Am I overreacting? Am I just being emotional? Am I tired? And we doubt the self. So speak to other people and just get a perspective on that. As I wrote there, ask the questions, what are you worth? It's a big topic. I won't unpack it now. But that worthiness, not just financially, not just of, you know, it
as
speaks
a human.
Of treatment, of respect. That will also help you to gauge what to do. And maybe your answer is exit, or maybe it's to stay. It will depend. Are you progressing? You referred to that earlier. That progression is not just financial progression. Mm. Are you growing? Are you being educated? Are you being capacitated? Are you taking on more responsibility in the workplace? And if the answer is no, then maybe the answer becomes clearer than what it might have been if you hadn't answered those questions. And probably most importantly, the biggest advice I would say is know where you are going. Have a plan. Know where you want to be. And how is this company, of course, it's a partnership. It is there to employ you for money, but it's hiring your time, your skills, your efforts, etc., to produce something for their financial benefit. Similarly, you need to be getting something out. And if it's just financially, then I would ask people to think twice about why they're there. It's got to be more than that. And if you have a plan for your life and where you want to see yourself in the future, I think it will also help with the decision-making process and the decision that you need to arrive at what to do about it.
Guys, we all need to do this again in January when we come back, because I think that's how we're going to set the agenda for the year. And thank you so much, Ayanda. Thank you
Such
so much
thank
for,
you.
For you as well, Manuka. Thank you so much, Dr. Andrew, for being here. I think, it just gives us topics to think about for January, because when we can start off on the right foot, we now have a plan and a concrete plan. So thank you so much to all of you for joining us. And this is where we leave it. I think it's lovely to know, but I think I want to harp on what was said at the end here by Ayanda saying, do you know your worth? Remember, they're not doing you a favor. They're paying you for the service and the skills that you actually possess. You're not working for free. So treat yourself as such.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.